Welcome back to part two of the Octagonal Offense rookie rankings post draft. Part one came out a few days ago, and we are going to go straight into part two.
All right, so let's talk about probably the least sexy position in the draft after everybody was picked a week ago. So we have, honestly, we have very close rankings between the two of us. And that's going to start off with a really solid top four tier. And that is Calvin Ridley, DJ Moore, both of which come in at 1 and 2 for each of us. And then Christian Kirk and Cortland Sutton, which we have interchangeably at 3 and 4. Beyond that is another tier that is very crowded with another 4 receivers. Michael Gallup, James Washington, Dante Pettis, and Anthony Miller. So let's real quick talk about these top 8 guys before we, top 8 guys before we go on to the bottom of the tier. Charlie, we are pretty much in agreement with the top 4. The next 4 are really close as well. James Washington is a guy that we're a little bit separated on. You have him at number 5, and I have him at 7. What in your mind pushes him up to your wide receiver 5?
Well, I think we need to pay attention to the Steelers' track record at receivers. They've told us they can go out and pick receivers and they can use them. And I think it's important that we listen to that. They just showed us that last year that they can supply 3 wide receivers. When Martavis was on the field, he got his piece. Juju was great all year long as a rookie, which is very encouraging. And Antonio Brown is arguably the best receiver in our last couple of years. So they got rid of Martavis. I think right away Martavis became the odd man out as soon as they drafted Juju. It became apparent that there was a dynamic mismatch, if you will, in that team, in that locker room, and Martavis is the odd man out. He was tweeting as soon as Juju was drafted. It was just a bad situation. But he still made some plays, got the ball, things like that. So I think Washington steps into a great position on a team that knows how to use wide receivers, throws the ball on average 30 to 35 times a game, sometimes upward of 40 times a game. And they're going to use their weapons. They're a high-scoring team. What I find most interesting is how Pittsburgh is now going to be swapping all 3 of these wide receivers around. They can all play the slot. They can all play outside. They can all move around. I think it'll be very, very interesting what Pittsburgh does. And Washington, just as a product of opportunity, and the fact he's a very skilled athlete, should put up some numbers. You know, numbers that you can be happy a rookie wide receiver is going to get for you.
Yeah, I have a couple things that have bumped him down to 7 for me. I have a lot of concerns about that offense long term. I think Ben Roethlisberger has gotten a little bit long in the tooth. I do believe that that offense can support 3 wide receivers. They just have some questions with Le'Veon Bell. How long is he going to be there? What do they have coming up behind him? He does a lot to put 8 men in the box, and that opens up the receiving core. They also have nothing going at tight end, and that concerns me on both ends of the spectrum for what could it do to help the short term, but also hurt the long term, depending on what they do with that position in the next year or two. The other thing that kind of affects me for Washington is I think in the short term, Gallup and Pettis are going to do better, but in the long term, I think Washington's a better receiver. So you kind of have to balance that when you're drafting. What do you need now? What do you need in the future? And that kind of affects rankings just a little bit for me.
Now, one thing I'm going to add that's sort of a sneaky little rose-colored glasses to James Washington's situation is he was, I believe, the leading receiver in college last year for yards per reception. If he wasn't leading, he was right near the top. I don't have the numbers in front of me, so I'm not going to try and pull him out. But I know that he averaged over 20 yards a reception last year in college, which is fantastic numbers. So he's a great deep threat. So even my thing with Washington is the targets that he does see are likely going to be quality targets. So now if he starts busting off a couple 60-yard touchdown bombs, that's, in the dynasty world, that's the promise of what's to come. So even if he goes 30 receptions for six, like even if he has a Will Fuller kind of year, like what Will Fuller was doing this year, and he was blowing up the world because he was catching a 60-yard touchdown every game, even if Washington throws up a couple of those, it's going to be the promise of what to come. So right now you're going to get him at like a late first-round value. He's going to turn you a return on that. You're going to gain on that. And that's what I'm looking for. And that's where I think he's a value.
Yeah, and what you were talking about with NCAA best receiving yardage, according to Ghost's Orange Report, he averaged 20.9 yards per reception, which is incredible. So I do like James Washington. If I'm drafting for a narrower, shorter window, he's going to fall just a little bit for me. If I'm in a full rebuild and I have the time, I really do like him. Next up for us, we've got three guys who are all kind of really close together. So we're going to go ahead and do the next total five. We have Dante Pettis coming out at 7. Anthony Miller at 7.5, and then we have EQSB, or just ESB if you're Charlie, and then we finish up with Traquan Smith and Deion Kane. Dante Pettis is one of those players who is a bit divisive. I love him because Matt Waldman loves him. We have a few other draft picks who also love him as well. What do you see that Dante Pettis could do to either raise or lower that draft stock? I know you have him at 8 and I have him at 6. Those are pretty close. What puts Pettis in the second round for you, Charlie?
So, like you mentioned, Matt Waldman. Matt Waldman has Dante Pettis ranked very highly. And that didn't change much when he went to the landing spot he did. So, in my experience, Matt Waldman has a very good track record at hitting some wide receivers. He's missed on some. That's an absolute. He certainly has. But he's hit on some as well. And one of those examples would be Martavis Bryant. He was very high on Martavis Bryant when many others weren't. And if you drafted Martavis Bryant like I did in the late second, mid third of your rookie drafts that year, you turn a huge windfall when he was worth a first-round draft pick the next year. And he's still holding value because he's got the age insulation and he's got the promise of what if. You've seen what he can do. Odell Beckham was another one. A lot of people have forgotten this. A lot of people have glossed over this aspect. But many people had Odell Beckham a lot lower in their drafts than they would like to admit at this point in time.
Yeah, a lot of people had him at least 8.
Yes. Like, that's right. A lot of people had him as their 5th receiver down to their 8th receiver. Anywhere in that range. Don't even try to lie now, you son of bitches, and tell me you didn't, because I know you did, and I'll find the tweets, and it'll take me a long time, and it'll piss me off, and I'll go even harder at you if I have to do it.
Yep, I missed on OBJ. Big.
Matt Waldman was always very, very high on him. If I recall, he was his 2nd or 3rd ranked receiver behind Evans and Watkins, where a lot of people had Cooks ahead, had Michael Thomas ahead, had a few other people ahead. So either way, that's why I personally was able to get OBJ at 1.8 to 1.10 in 3 different rookie drafts that year. There was one or two where I had to take him at 104 or 105, but that's just because I wasn't going to let him go. But I got him in 108 to 110 in at least 3 different rookie drafts that year because people weren't as high on him as they became quite quickly.
Yeah, Michael Thomas, I think, was the next year.
You're probably right.
People will shred us on Twitter. It was A-Rob was there.
I was just on a rant. I was just going.
Marquise Lee.
Names were coming out.
I know.
I could have thrown out any name. It wouldn't have mattered. They were all ranked higher than OBJ.
The fact checkers are on Twitter. You know, I just... Sorry, I totally interrupted your rant. Go ahead. Go ahead.
I got your facts checking hanging down low. The point is, I believe in certain people's processes, and I've seen certain hits. And to me, this Dante Pettis call has a lot of that OBJ feel. Don't take this too far. It's just the fact that he's kind of doesn't seem like he should be that guy. But he just might be. He's got a lot of great skill sets. He's not physically imposing, but he can put enough things together to make a difference. Just like OBJ, just like Antonio Brown, they've got a lot of things that package very well. There's a lot of similarities there. He's got a really nice situation. That's a truth. That's a fact. Just like OBJ did. He should get on the field. I mean, you've got Godwin, who, you know, he's a great guy. He had terrible tragedy last year with his baby child, and then he scored that amazing touchdown. And I think if you saw that and you have any kind of a heart, you probably shed a pretty good tear and pounded the table for him and said, yeah, man, I'm here for you today. That's on you. So you hope the best for the guy, but he's just Marquise Goodwin. He's not a day changer, you know. And then you got Pierre Garçon, great body man, great possession receiver, but that's it. And he's long in the tooth. So there's a really great opportunity for Pettis in an organization that's seeming like it's really kind of gaining some leadership and becoming a strong organization. That's the kind of thing that you don't mind hitching your wagon to. When you feel those things heading in the right direction, it's better to be a day early than a day late in those situations.
Yep. I totally agree with you there. One other... Nice to hear from you, Loki.
Loki agrees too.
Yeah. One other receiver I feel like is worth mentioning there for the 49ers is Trent Taylor. I don't think he is completely dead, but he is gasping for breath. Here, as we finish out our wide receivers, we have EQSB, Tre'Quan Smith, and Deion Kane. I think Tre'Quan Smith is one of those guys you can argue for higher or lower than we have him. Deion Kane kind of is what he is. He's going to have some opportunity. With as far as EQSB fell, why on earth would we have him at 9, 8, 9, 10 in our rankings? Charlie, make an argument, because I think most people know, if they're listening, I live close to Notre Dame, so I love this dude.
Well, for me, it's pretty simple. When you're talking about the 8th, 9th, 10th ranked wide receiver in this class, you're truly talking about mid to late second round draft capital. You are. You're not talking about past years where the 8th round or the 8th ranked wide receiver may be the 10th player off the board. That's not the case this year. So understand, when we talk about our 8th, 9th, 10th ranked wide receiver, we're talking about a player that you should be looking to get from your late second to late third of your rookie draft, okay? So the thing with ESB, so the Q thing, okay, my thing with Q is it's such a odd letter where to me it should either be the dominant letter or it should be out. That's my thing with the Q. I can get with either calling him EQ or just Q, but the four letters, because Q and S and even B are kind of dominant letters.
What if we called him Equan? Tangent.
This is a really weird tangent.
Equan.
But then that's too much like Quan, and then that's like Laquan, there's...
Or equine, even, if you're talking about horses. Yeah.
I could get with the EQ. If you just went with EQ, I could get that, because E is a soft letter and Q is the dominant letter.
All right.
So I get that. But truthfully, to me, in my ear, the way I hear it, the S and the Q and the B are all dominant letters. So it becomes too much. It becomes E. Soft. The E should be soft, so it's like E, Q, S, B. But if you go Q, S, B, it just, that doesn't work. So then it becomes too much. That's my thing with the Q. So I think the Q should be the centerpiece, or it should be gone. But that's enough. I digress. So the thing with Equanimeous St. Brown, we truly believe in his athletic ability. And we're homers, and that's fine. And you burn on these guys as often as you hit. But you can't hit on them if you don't draft them. So you can't deny that he is a physical specimen. He's got a lot of tools. He's got some weaknesses, but they're things that can be corrected. So we both wanted him to go to the Packers. That was our dream spot. You know, Ted Turner is the wide receiver guru. Even if that's maybe a little bit unwarranted in a way, over-embellished, exaggerated, you name it, whatever. He's had some nice hits, but there's been a few come through the system that aren't so pretty either. So let's hope that Equanimeous is one of the pretty ones, and he was just a steal for the team, and Ted Thompson picked out. Did I say Ted Turner last time? I probably did. Ted Thompson picked out a good one here. He's a physical beast. He's got all the tools. You can learn tools. You can learn catch technique. You can learn route running. You can't learn being 6'4", 220 at your smallest. That's not a learnable thing. He's born with something that very few people have. He is a monster of a man that's at the smallest he's ever going to be. He should only put on his man weight from here. And he can move like a cheetah. So it's just a matter of, can we see the dream come together? And if it comes to a late second or an early third round pick, I'm willing to close my eyes and hope for the best.
I'm right there with you. And if you're one of those future contract type of people, if you look at next year's Packers contracts, you have Davante Adams at a cap hit of $10.6 million. The next highest receiver and the only receiver on the team that has a cap hit is Trevor Davis at seven.
Who?
You're right. Yeah, exactly.
Who?
At 7.
I've seriously never heard that name before.
Yeah. $7.76 million. Or excuse me, $0.7.76 million. So, it's Davante Adams and no one. So, EQ should have an opportunity next year. There's going to have to be some contract extensions in order to keep him off the field. So, I am all about EQ. And that's definitely, there's a part of me that says that as a Notre Dame fan. But I've gotten to see him play at his worst, at his best. And the quarterback play last year really affected his draft stock, in my opinion. Just a few honorable mentions for quarterback, and Charlie and I don't have them rated necessarily, but...
Well, hold on.
Yeah,
we missed a little something, because just for the listeners, we've had all kinds of technical difficulties on my end tonight, so it's a little rough that way. But due to our technical difficulties, we missed over the best part of our quarterback discussion. So we're going to just completely backtrack for about, well, who knows how long. But we need to talk about Baker Mayfield. We missed Baker Mayfield due to the technical difficulties out of our quarterback conversation. But he was going to be one of the primary points. The reason being is he's my number three. And I think that's only because the other two below him are rough. But he's Zach's number one. So we are a fair bit different on Baker Mayfield, and I think the reasons for that could be interesting. So we're going to backtrack a little bit, and Zach, you start us off and tell us why Baker is your number one.
All right. So the reasons why I really like Baker, there's a few things that kind of, when you combine them, kind of push him over the top for me. I think the fact that he went 101 shows that the Browns are really going to put a lot into him. I think if we look at that 2 years ago, we say, oh, that's a reason to drop him down because the Browns have nothing. Well, they've worked really hard to improve the team as a whole. And taking Baker 101 is another thing to show that. Number two, his receivers are fucking amazing. Some of the best in the league. You have the worst of his top three is Corey Coleman, who, if he finally is able to put it together, is an amazing receiver prospect. He has a ton of skills. He is fast as fuck. He can jump higher than the mountains. He is a very good receiver prospect. You throw into that Josh Gordon, who I have been very vocal about the last few years. I think he's a really good talent. He has gotten in his own way over the last few years. My hope is that he has beaten this drug issue that he has and is able to put it together on the field. And then on top of that, you add Miami Dolphins slot receiver. No name necessary, Jarvis Landry. He puts up numbers. He is not the sexiest player of all time. But I think those things are going to help Baker Mayfield out. On top of that, he has one of those intangibles that I feel like I sometimes will lean one way and sometimes to the other. I really do appreciate a little bit of humility, and that's one of the reasons why I love Lamar Jackson. Mayfield is kind of the opposite. He was one of those players that he had to walk on a couple times. He had to really prove himself on the field, and because of that, he is very boisterous about the player that he is. He has a lot of confidence in himself, and he is willing to air jerk himself off on the field to throw that in your face. And I think that's something that is going to mesh really well with the Browns. I think it's going to convert into fantasy points. I think year one, we're going to see a huge, absolutely huge disappointment from him if he's on the field for 10 games. I think we're going to see a far greater number of interceptions than touchdowns, but I think year two, we're going to see that change quite a bit. And I'm a big fan of Baker Mayfield. I love him as a prospect, love him as a young player. I do have some reservations about what he's going to do on the field year one and possibly year two, but I think if you look long term, he is going to be a transformational quarterback in the NFL. I think he's going to have one of those faces that in 10 years you look back at this draft and you go, oh, okay, 2018, that was the Baker Mayfield draft. Now, I will say, I do understand that there is the total flip side to that coin, and a lot of the same arguments for him really make sense against him. And Charlie, I think you probably have a fair amount of those arguments and rationale on why he is definitely not the quarterback one. So lay it on me. Slaughter me.
You know I got those examples. So my problem with Mayfield is much less about skill or ability and much more about situation. So this is one of those qualities that I add to my fantasy analysis, and it's a quality that you cannot quantify. So it's infallible. It's not something that you can draw a metric for, but it's all part of what I will stress over and over in my player evaluation, in why I take big swings on players, It's about understanding the human dynamic, the human aspect, the human nature behind this game, behind the scenarios, behind everything that's going on. So now, Cleveland is a prime example, and Mayfield are a prime example of a perfect storm, in my opinion, coming together that is not going to work. While I do agree that Mayfield is very talented, and there will be flashes that look fantastic, a big bomb to Josh Gordon, a misdirection play to Nick Chubb, a crossing pattern over the middle to Jarvis Landry that he breaks down the field, you name it, there's going to be some of that, absolutely. But Cleveland is not New York. Cleveland is not LA. But the problem is Cleveland is always in the spotlight. And for always the wrong reasons. Because they are historically a losing franchise. Okay? They are made up of losers. Now, that has been changing over the last couple of years. They've built their lines. They've built in the trenches. They've built their defense. They've changed their attitude. They've acquired draft capital and equity. They've done smart things. They're showing that they want to go a different way. But I don't think they're quite there yet, and I don't think they're quite ready to jump in the deep end of the pool. So you've already got very big personalities there. You've got Josh Gordon. You've got Jarvis Landry. These guys are loud. They want attention. They like the swagger. That's cool. But now you're going to add in a quarterback who is the same personality. He's the guy running down the field, swinging the flag in the air. He's the guy grabbing his crotch. He is that same personality. You're getting too many type A personalities in a room that is in Cleveland. It's not in Los Angeles, Texas, New York, one of those major hubs. So you've got this big personality playing in a small market that's only put in the big market for all the wrong reasons. I don't see that as being a good recipe. I see it as Johnny Manziel 2.0 with maybe a little more polish. I think Cleveland would benefit from, they need a Manning. They need a big, dumb statue that just sits there and goes, okay, I play football, and I'm really good at it. Yeah, I'm happy to be here. Thank you very much. That's what they need. They don't need a big personality. They need a general that just sits there and can look in the camera at whatever question and basically just be unfazed. They don't need an emotional personality. They don't need a guy that's going to run down the field screaming and yelling and freaking out. They don't need that. And I think it's a bad fit. And while I think they're going to throw up some great plays and some flash, I think it's going to crash and burn. Because the personality dynamic, it's not going to be a cohesive unit. Somebody has to step back. Somebody's going to have to decide they're going to be the admiral. They're going to be the 1A. They're going to be the right-hand man. They're not going to be the one in front of the camera. But who's it going to be? So, while I like Baker's talent, I love his passion, I don't think it's a good fit.
So, I'm going to have to disagree with you just a little bit in a few areas. I actually think Baker's running down the field, like, rah-rah, super pumped-up mentality is going to be good for Cleveland. It's one of those things where Josh Gordon catches, you know, 2 touchdowns in the game, and Baker Mayfield is more pumped about it than Gordon is. Like, if there's something that's going to keep you on the straight and narrow more than that, like, your quarterback is more excited about you doing well in a game than you did, I think that's great. I think Jarvis Landry is going to just kind of do what he does. He's going to catch those check down passes. He's stable, this, that, and the other. And Njoku should grow this year. We've talked about the backfield. I really do think that Baker Mayfield's big personality is good for this team. However, I do also understand that that makes them makes him susceptible to a bigger bust potential. And there's a lot of pressure with this team and being the first pick in the draft, and that's definitely going to weigh on him. My hope is that he surrounds himself with the right people to help him understand exactly what his role is going to be and what his blame is for the negative and what his successes are in this system and with this team. But yeah, you're right. This is a volatile situation. It's not like the Patriots traded up to take him. There's a lot on his shoulders, and a lot could go right or wrong.
One thing, while the Jets are, you know, in no way going to be a successful franchise in the near future, one thing they've done right is everything they've done, well, not everything, but most of what they've done in regards to Josh McCown. The problem with Cleveland is while they've done so much right in the last 3 years in putting the pieces together in the right areas and changing certain directions, they've still wasted a lot of draft capital on poor draft picks, poor personalities, and they still don't have that general. Whereas if you look at, could you imagine Josh McCown with his heart and soul and I'm going to live and die and bleed for my guys and they in turn then back him up? Could you imagine him in Cleveland right now with that personnel? All those young guys and they see this guy that's bleeding for them, that's getting pounded for them? That would be something.
Yeah.
That would be interesting. That would be special.
That's that veteran journeyman mentality that you develop just through struggle.
That's right. The sum of the parts. You understand. It's like the old Jake Taylor in Major League. He's just looking for one more summer in the sun. And he understands in being a leader to these young guys, they're going to carry him to the promised land without realizing they're doing it. They think he's leading them. But these young guys are going to carry him. And that's one thing the Jets have done well. And you can see that. You see that passion in their team. They're losing. They're getting destroyed. But they rallied behind 35-year-old Josh McCown because he bled for them. He cried for them. He pounded the table for them. That's what that team is missing. Because now you've brought in a dynamic, a personality that isn't going to be humble. He's the 101. He has to answer all the tough questions. He doesn't have time to be humble. And that's where that organization is still failing. It's still failed. They've been failing, and now they're failed, and they have to rebuild it. And they can't rebuild it, in my opinion, with Baker Mayfield. They need to rebuild it with the rest of the team rallying around a strength, an idea, a purpose, a principle. But they've never had those things. They've got talent, and they've got draft picks, and they've got new players, but they don't have an idea. They don't have a passion. They don't have anything to rally behind. Where's the rally cry there? I mean, the Jets are going to lose. They're going to be the third team in the NFC East, or AFC East to the Bills in fourth. But they're passionate. Their fans believe. They still sell out. Josh McCown's still crying in a press conference because he believes in his running back. He believes in his wide receiver. That's something. That sells tickets, that rallies fans, and that's what Cleveland is missing. They don't have it, and it's a big thing.
And the thing that I think that Cleveland actually does have with Baker Mayfield is he is already a come-from-behind story through the college football situations that he was in. He had to walk on twice. He already has that fuck you mentality for the NFL. Fuck you. Nobody thought that I was going to be the first pick in the draft. Fuck you. Nobody thought that I was going to actually play as a college football player. And fuck you. I'm going to go out here with these guys and I'm going to win some games. I'm going to use my receivers who Josh Gordon, nobody thought that he was going to be in the league 3 years ago. Zach Bonner said he's done. He can't get his shit together. He has this drug problem, and it's fucking weed, and he doesn't have a big enough set of balls to get beyond it. He's not going to play in the NFL. This is the kind of guy that I think Baker Mayfield is, and I understand the other side to that argument, the side that you've got right now, and it really does make a lot of sense. And it's one of those things where it's either I feel like you buy into the bravado and the swollen dick kind of mentality that Baker Mayfield has, or you say, no, dude, you're this guy that you've had some success, but you don't understand what you're actually getting yourself into. And it's a coin toss right there on which one is going to actually be right. And if I'm in a 2QB or Superflex league, I can be talked into Lamar Jackson over Baker Mayfield. If I'm just kind of looking in the late rounds for a 1QB league and all the QBs are left, I'm going to go with that Baker Mayfield upside. It's a passionate argument to make, especially for a position that is not super valued in fantasy football. But I do like me some Baker Mayfield.
Well, yeah, like you said, it's relative to where your team's at right now and what your goal is. If you're sitting in the Superflex league and you don't have a second quarterback, Baker Mayfield's going to be enticing because he's going to be starting day one and he's going to have options. But say you're sitting in a Superflex league right now and you've got Philip Rivers, Eli Manning, and Blake Bortles. So you've got two quarterbacks every week, but you know the future is rough.
Lamar Jackson.
Exactly, right? Whether yep. you're Eli and Ben's age or you're Roethlisberger, even though he just got re-signed, and that gives us all a big sigh of relief in the Superflex.
All right, so switch one of those names to Matt Ryan, one of those veteran QBs. Now switch that name to Matt Ryan. Who are you going with for the rookie quarterback?
Well, then I'm going 100% Lamar, because I know I have all day to wait, because now I've got the insurance of, so let's say we switched out Philip Rivers for
Jared Goff.
Now I know I've got the years of Matt Ryan ahead of me. He just got secured. I've got who's my secondary? Blake Bortles. I've got the secondary years of Blake Bortles that I feel good. He just got re-signed. And now I've got the insulation of Lamar Jackson behind that, who I can wait on as long as I want. And all he's going to do is gain value. And chances are I might not even ever start him. And I'm going to trade him in a year or two for a early first round pick when he's the starter and everything else.
All right. Let's throw out a combo of crushing ass now and really on the upswing. So let's go Matt Ryan and Jared Goff are your top two quarterbacks. You have a capable quarterback three of Blake Bortles. Which rookie QB are you drafting in 2QB or Superflex with those guys?
Well, we got to be honest in that in most drafts in this situation, the quarterback isn't going to get to the person in that position. Right. We know that you're sitting on three. Somebody ahead of you in the draft is going to be QB needy. But say somebody falls to your lap. In a 2QB or a super flex, quarterbacks are a double-edged sword. It all depends on the room you're in. Sometimes they're worth a mint, and sometimes you can't get the value they're worth. So you have to understand the room you're in. If you're in a room where quarterbacks have some value, absolutely. Get one of those guys that you're just going to tuck away. If you've got a taxi squad and you could put Lamar Jackson on your taxi squad for the next 2 years while you sit on Blake Bortles, Jared Goff, and an older guy, I mean, what more do you want in Dynasty? Seriously, what more do you want? That is what Dynasty is about. It's, you never have a need if you don't have to fill a need. You fill your needs, become, this is the Patriots way, and I fucking hate talking about the Patriots because I despise the Patriots, but you fill your needs become before they become readily apparent. So you don't wait till you need a quarterback. You get Jackson now at a value. You stash him on your taxi for a year or two, wherever you can put him. You've got the room for him. And you gain a mint on him because you don't need him. And he's a value. So why wouldn't you take him? Why would you take Kalen Ballage in a super flex draft in the 204 when you're looking at Lamar Jackson? I mean, maybe not. Again, don't jump on us for numbers. I'm throwing things out. But whatever situation, change the names. Either way, it's the 1-2 turn. It's early second. You're looking at Lamar Jackson. Why would you take a flyer on a running back? That's not the position you want to be taking a flyer on a running back. In a one quarterback league? Sure. Absolutely. In a two quarterback league and a super flex? No, this is where you want to be grabbing that guy now that's going to be worth an absolute mint a year from now.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. I mean, we have different arguments for or against Mayfield, but I think overall, depending on a team makeup, we have similar ideas on what you should do. So, real quick, we have a lot of receivers who make up the next tier below what we have rated. So, I'm gonna throw out a few names, and Charlie, if anyone sticks out to you, just tell me what you think about him. I have DJ Chark, Alan Lazard, Darius Fountain, Kiki Kuti, Marcel Aitman, Trey Quinn, Antonio Callaway, Deshaun Hamilton, Jaleel Scott, and Jamon Moore. Is there anybody in that list that you say, if you have the pick, add them to your roster?
For me, it's probably going to be Kiki Kuti, Kuti, however you want to say it. He's a good athlete. He's in a decent, sneaky position in a way. It seems like it's very blocked, and it may be. But as we've talked about before with Dez Bryant and with stuff like that, Houston needs receiving weapons. They don't have a tight end. They could very likely go with a 3 wide receiver set. Will Fuller is greatly talented, very fast, but not necessarily shown to be made of steel. So, there's a nice little sneaky possibility for Kiki in Houston, in my opinion. That's an offense on the rise. They don't have a lot of strong running back opportunities. While they do have a strong defense, I think they're going to be the type of team in the vein of, say, the Patriots or the Falcons, where, hey, if they poured up 45 points a game, that's what they're going to do. They're not that concerned about it. They're going to score points. So I think QT in that group of people is the best. I've seen him going in. He's actually had quite a wide range. He's going to be one of those people where there's certain guys on him, and if you're in one of those leagues where somebody's on him, he might go as far as the early second. But if you're in a league where he's not necessarily a highly touted name, he's falling deep. He can be your last pick of the draft quite easily.
Yeah, I think a couple names that stick out to me are DJ Chark. He is he has a really good opportunity there with Jacksonville. Dante Pokemon Creep is he's become just a guy, in my opinion. Trey Quinn with Washington, while he was Mr. Irrelevant, has a really good opportunity there in Washington. He just has to put some good film on during the preseason and some of the camps that they have. Antonio Callaway, if he is able to keep himself on the straight and narrow, he has a really good opportunity to be the wide receiver 4 there with the Browns. And then there's a handful of other players that have good opportunities. So the While round two and three may not be super rich, there is there are some players in the fourth round that if you have some multiple picks, there's you have some players that you may be able to hit on. So, we are finally at the end of this episode. We have had a lot of technical difficulties. All right, so we've had a lot of technical difficulties tonight. Charlie is now off the recording. He is on the chat, but not able to record. So, real quick, we just want to say this has been a rather long episode for us tonight. It is now 10:17 Eastern in the AM, so we've been on for, I don't know, 2.5-3 hours. So it's been a really fun episode for us. We love talking about these draft guys. So if you have any draft questions or interjections, please hit us up on Facebook. You can find me at Bonnerfett with two Fs. You can find Charlie at CoolHandCP3. The podcast is at AuctionPod. And we're really excited that you listened with us. I would imagine at this point this has been 2 episodes. So thank you for joining us. If you have any disagreements with what we have for our rankings, totally shout them out. You know, this is a very diverse and open thread for us. So we're excited to hear who has who where. And thank you so much for listening in.